and especially the Vice President, who has had two very arduous weeks abroad, has a busy schedule today and tomorrow with the President out of the country, and he has so graciously come to be with us this evening. He's asked that he be excused at an early point, and of course we would want to adhere to his wishes. We have had a most significant day today, the first meeting of the steering committee of the Experimental City Project, and we are going to have very few speeches this evening and relatively few introductions. The first, however, is for your co-host this evening, Wayne Thompson, Vice President of Dayton's, and I guess we could say that Mr. Donald and John Coles are your hosts here this evening. Wayne, take a bow. I have had the pleasure on occasion of introducing Dr. Spilhouse. I have a new story to tell today. You all know that he is the originator and the creator of the general concept of the experimental city. Athol and I, about 48 months ago, I think, first began to talk about this. He'd been thinking about it, I'm sure, for some time before that. I think he's one of the most creative scientists in the world, and I'm just glad that he has come up with this idea, which will have great meaning for the United States and for Minnesota. Today, when we came to the executive office building to go to the Indian Treaty Room for our meeting, we were asked to identify ourselves at the desk. And typically, Athol had absolutely no identification. I mean, he's probably the only man in America who goes off, you know, without a top coat and no name in the suit, no credit cards. You know, there he is. So finally, the guard shields the paper, and he says to the other two of us who were with Athol, "What's his name?" And so I said, "Spilhouse." And then he's still shielding, and he looks up at Athol and he says, "Spell your first name." And then A-T-H-E-L-S-T-A-N. He says, "You can go right in." So I take pleasure in calling on the chairman of the Experimental City Project, Dr. Athelstan Spilhouse. Athol.
Well, this is a most heartwarming occasion to me, Mr. Vice President, your graciousness in coming here, and our steering committee, the representatives, and the distinguished guests that are here. I just feel it's too much. I had a little idea many years ago. It was Otto that I talked to about it, because I daren't suggest anything like an experimental city. But Otto gave me encouragement. We went to, a little later, to the president of the university, met Wilson. He gave us encouragement. We got courage. We went on. We talked to the vice president. Of course, I knew he would be for it, because though you may know him for many of the things he's done, I have some little things that I know about him that you may not know. When there was nobody up on the hill who even knew how to pronounce the word oceanography, and although when he was a senator, he was from the center of the country, he backed the efforts that I was associated with to get the great effort that's going in this country in oceanography. Again, I only had the idea. He put the sinew in it. And now I'm so happy that we have this great council. We have oceanography at the top level with space, and he is the chairman of this council, which I think will bring the United States to its supremacy in oceanography as well. So when we went on to the experimental city and I knew he was behind it, I was kind of real sure. And then I could go out and talk about this. But then from there on, we got more of our friends, our representatives from Minnesota behind the idea, our private industries behind the idea. And this to me is a great occasion because it's a culmination. And then we had to bring it down to Washington. And the important thing was to get in the many groups in government that should be interested in this. And as I said facetiously today, maybe it's hard to get a grant out of one department of government, but it's six times as hard to get the same grant out of three departments of government. Yes, but we thought it was worthwhile because we needed these three departments of government to participate in our effort. This is just a great occasion, and I think from this evening off, our idea is truly experimental. I think that as long as we're in the family here, Minnesota is a great place for it, although I say quite honestly that projects are put where the people who live and breathe and want to do them are. I cited this afternoon the example, why was the linear accelerator, the 2-mile accelerator, put across the St. Andreas Fault? A shaky kind of a place to put it. Because Panofsky was there, he had the idea, and the support was there. We happen to have had the idea in Minnesota, but there are many other reasons why Minnesota is a good place for it. If it's an experimental city, we need to have it work, to have these systems work in all kinds of weather. We've got it in Minnesota. If we were in Texas, we'd have to build an all-weather facility. Well, I could go on, but you know what we're planning, otherwise you wouldn't be here. You're for it, otherwise you wouldn't be here. It's just heartwarming to see a little idea brought to fruition by the efforts of so many good friends in all places, in the highest levels of government, which just honors me, in the highest places in our local industry, and in the highest places in our universities, including our steering committee, which is national, and who've given their time because they're excited about the idea. I am just deeply humble that a little idea could get this tremendous support, and I'm grateful to you. I also feel the responsibility that from tomorrow, we go on, we work on a schedule, and we turn out things to justify your support.
Thank you, Athol. I know I'm only supposed to use 10 words in introducing the next speaker, but I hope you'll forgive a personal reference. Many years ago, I guess almost 30 years ago, on the campus of the University of Minnesota, a rookie sophomore reporter was called over to the city desk by Graham Hovey, who was now writing editorials for the New York Times, and told to go over to cover a debate with Northwestern in Burton Hall. And I guess this was really my first assignment of any significance. And the captain of the team that evening is now at my right hand. I think I wrote one of the first stories ever written about the vice president. And it has been a great source of enjoyment to me to realize this through the years. All I can say tonight is that I think all of us are proud of him, not only for the things he has done through the years, not only for his foresightedness in advocating and putting his force behind projects like the Experimental City, but for his performance for our country abroad these last 2 weeks. I think especially tonight, I'd like again to propose a toast. Gentlemen,
thank
the Vice President of the United States.
To the Vice President.
Here.
I think I'll just stand up.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much, my friend Otto, Senator Mondale, and the distinguished members of the Minnesota delegation to the Congress, Dr. Spilhouse, and General Schriever, and others, all, and our co-hosts. I surely don't want to forget both our friend Wayne Thompson of Dayton's and Don, indeed, and our friends of the Coles Publications. I guess that I'm doing quite well in the last week with the Coles Publications. Last night I was in New York with Mike Coles for his dinner, and tonight I'm here with my friend Otto Sylla. I want to take just a very few minutes. I do have to run along. I explained to Otto that I have a very early appointment in the morning and another one around 8:15, and so I need to kind of move along. But I wanted to come tonight because of the very special meaning of this gathering. There have been, of course, many preliminary meetings about the experimental city. And everybody around this table has had something to do with the success, or at least the forward progress of this particular endeavor. And I thought that it would be very well for us just to reflect for a few moments on what we're about to enter upon and what it means. Washington, D.C. is the center for discussion of almost every conceivable topic, and I guess that's the way it should be. But I would gather that of all the subject matters that are discussed in recent years, the most frequent discussion is on the subject of urban life. What's happening in our cities? How do we make our cities better places in which to live? In other words, how do we make the city, which should be man's most, really his most noble institution, an institution worthy of the best that mankind has to offer. The regrettable fact is that our cities have really outgrown their functional capacity, that is, their capacity to properly service or serve their inhabitants. And because this is a fact, people such as gathered around this table tonight have decided that we ought to do something about it. Now, everyone knows that in order to improve a product, you have to do experimentation. And it is only the people or the organization that is willing to experiment that really finally makes advance. I'm not at all positive that the experimental city will come out as some of us dream that it will. But I am positive of one thing, that somebody needs to try it. Somebody has to have the vision. Somebody has to have the design in mind. Somebody has to have the hope, and somebody has to have the courage, the daring to do it, or at least to make the attempt. And I'm very pleased that the agencies of government, I think there are three departments involved in this, have seen fit to pool some of their resources to give a group of men and women a great community a chance to demonstrate its capacity to envision the kind of a city that meets the needs of modern man and can apply modern technology to the needs of modern man. The fact is that most of our cities are not at all adapted to the form of life and to the pressures of life that are applied to them. When I was called on by Otto just before I was introduced, he said, "Well, you ought to tell him a little bit about your recent visit to Europe." I said, "Well, I don't know whether this is the place for that, but I thought I'd mention just one thing. While I was there, and speaking in Britain, I said, what we ought to be thinking about are cooperative projects in the so-called Atlantic Partnership that go far beyond just our defense structure. We ought to be thinking of cooperative endeavors in the political and social and economic field. And one of the areas where we ought to bend our effort is in urban affairs. Because in Europe, where the culture is similar to ours, or should I put it this way, where our culture is the child of theirs, the same problems exist that exist here, sometimes in miniature, but sometimes in a really intensified and extensive proportion. They're building whole new cities in certain parts of Europe, entire new communities. Sometimes they had to do so because they were devastated by the war. Other times they did so because of the pressures of population on the old cities and they had to move out. Now we've been building suburbs, but we haven't built many new cities. So we get what we call today the urban sprawl rather than the integrated, planned city that meets all of the economic, the political, the cultural, the social, the physical needs of its inhabitants. And what the experimental city can provide is an opportunity to take all of these factors that are required for good living and see if we can't design them and make them workable, not only in a theoretical concept, but in a reality, in a practical application. So while I was there in Great Britain, I suggested that we, just as there's an Asian conference, by the way, in Honolulu this year, on urban life and on the city and its problems and its dimensions, which will call in all of the great city officials and planners of the Asian and Pacific area. I said it seems much more realistic to me, or at least every bit as much in terms of practical application, for us to meet with our friends in Europe. And let's talk about how we build new cities. Let's talk about what the city for the year century 21 is going to be. Now that's where I come in with my good friend, Dr. Spilhouse. I was in Seattle at the World's Fair, and I've never forgotten the insignia, century 21. And anybody that's worthy of being listened to at all, for even as long as I've taken now, ought to be talking about the year 2000. Because if you don't know what's going to happen in 1967, you really ought not to be at the dinner or any place else. That's been pretty well charted. We ought to be thinking about where we're going to go at least to 1976, which is our 200th birthday for freedom. And we ought to be looking to the year 2000. I've said to some of our friends up in Congress that a man of foresight and a vision, and that's always true of senators, you know, Fritz, because with those six-year terms, you can have 4 years of foresight and vision, and 2 years of recouping all the vision and foresight that you had to get reelected. Yeah. But one of the great attributes of that six-year term is to give you a chance to look 10 years down the line, to gamble, in a sense, to take some chances. We need to really now, with the pace of change, take a look down the next 33 years. And quite frankly, it's going to take us, I'm sure, a rather sizable period of time to be able to make some of the changes that are absolutely essential. I saw the city, this great and beautiful city, Rome, the other day, just totally blocked with traffic, absolutely immobile. You were much better off to just go and walk and forget your automobile. Well, now this is ridiculous. that man can conceive his trip to the moon and really is planning and looking forward to interplanetary travel and can conceive and actually make a reality communication satellites, can think about a solar probe and a solar laboratory, and yet hasn't had the vision to think about a city in which he and his children can live in our lifetime. So that's what we're here to talk about. And I'm glad that my great university, you'll have to pardon this, General, you know, we do have a little parochial pride out home about these things. I'm glad that a great land-grant college out in the Midwest, in the upper Midwest, has had the vision and the daring and the courage and the plain unadulterated guts to look ahead and to see what could be done and to be willing to take the chance, either for success or failure. And quite frankly, I think it will be successful. And I want to say again that I want to say to my friends in the executive branch, the amounts of money involved here are very limited in terms of what we deal with at this stage of the game. This first year, that's what we're at now. We're at the first year of study. A grant that what runs about $250,000, $240,000 or more. That amount of money is just is a small amount of money for what is envisioned. I noted my friend Neil Peterson, and I want to pay tribute to Neil tonight. I generally don't go around bragging on my staff because I like to claim credit for everything myself if it's good. And all the mistakes we blame on the staff. But Neil has been a partner in this, Otto, as you know, and he's devoted to it. And I've told him, look, you just move ahead and give it all you have. Not because it's for Minnesota, even though we have, well, all of us have it. You can't help it. What is it, old Sir Walter Scott, who said, is there a man who has never said, this is my own, my native land? Well, after all, I'm not much of a poet, and I don't always remember poetry, but I'm a graduate of the University of Minnesota, and much of what I have in life is due to that state. And I like to see my state be what it is, the North Star State. And the North Star has guided many a person to a safe and successful journey. And it's always been the sort of a guiding light for the people that were discoverers and explorers. The North Star was the one that is the star that gave a sense of direction to the explorers. Well, there's no reason at all why our part of the country shouldn't be innovative, creative, why we shouldn't be experimental. This is the age of discovery. This is the age of adventure, of experiment and experimentation. And that's why I think we've got something here. And I'm delighted that General Schriever is associated with this project, because we've learned a great deal in our weapons systems, in our space program, in what we call systems analysis. This is a whole new concept of organization of men and materials, management. And the difference between success and failure is management, period. If you have a grand design, if you have imagination and management, you have success. If you don't have management, it doesn't make any difference how poetic your nature, how much your design, or how beautiful your dream, it just ends up with another dream or another great hope. And the whole, this business of bringing together government and the university and the private sector, as we were talking here at the table, is the answer. Everything today is too big for any one segment of the economy to handle it. There isn't a single major problem that confronts our country today that any one segment of our economy can handle alone. Whether it's business or labor or the university or the finance community or government. And that is if you want a free economy. If you want a society in which individual freedom means something and private enterprise is a fact of economics as well as a fact of life. Therefore, we have to bring together in a form of cooperative endeavor, of partnership, all of these forces. We have to find a way to bring them to bear upon a central problem and to solve that problem. Now, that's what the Experimental City Project is about. How do we reach out through the university, through the federal government, cooperation with the state government, through the private enterprise system, through the finance community, through all of our technicians, bring them to bear upon a new concept of living, where the city can really deal with problems of transportation, of sanitation, of clean air and clean water, of adequate living space, of cultural development and economic viability. How can you do it? I think it can be done. Frankly, if I knew how to do it, I wouldn't have time to be here tonight. I just have a feeling that it can be done. And I'll just conclude on this note. I have long believed that a university had a greater role to fill than just graduating great scholars. And don't misunderstand me. I believe in scholarship. And I believe in meditation, and I believe in reflection, even though I've never had enough chance to opportunity to practice all of it, but I believe in it. It's sort of like my religion. I believe in it and have a deep and abiding faith in it, and it's just the fact that I haven't had a chance to work on it as much as I should. But I also believe that a university ought to be more than a meadow of meditation or merely an island of retreat for reflection. I think it ought to be at the center of action. I think our professors are better when they meet up with the rough and tough problems that are right out on the battle line of human existence.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think our students are a whole lot better too. And one of the real problems today at the university is how to bring the student into contact with reality. Mm-hmm. And when we bring that student in contact with reality, he's going to have a lot less time to fool around with some of the unrealities of our time. And he'll be a better student. Don't brand me an old fogey. I still have a youthful spirit, a youthful heart, if not youth itself. But I just believe that we need to get young people involved in this. And I heard Otto say, I believe it was Otto or one of you here at the table talking tonight about having gone out to the university and spoken to some of the members of the School of Business Administration about this. And they got excited about it. And that's a fact. Young people are excitable, and they will get excited if we give them something to think about. But if you're just going to go around and talk to them about how you patch a hole in the asphalt in the street, right, or how you get one-way traffic on a two-way street, or how you prevent double parking, or how somehow or another you're going to try to see if you can't get the garbage collected 4 days a week instead of three, they're not going to get excited about that. They're going to leave that to Grandpa and your great-grandfathers. They're going to have something else to do. What we have to do is to give them the chance to build a whole brand new world, because most every young person wants to think he can do it. And I don't know whether they can build a whole new world, but they can build a new city. And if we give them a chance to build a new city, you never can tell. They may even be able to do something about this kind of mixed-up world of ours. And I kind of think they can. I'm going to leave. I'm going to give my proxy to Senator Mondale. He'll vote it several times. I might even share it right on my friend Clark out here. I just want to congratulate you, Otto, for your persistence in this, and I really mean it. It takes just a kind of a dogged determination and a great vision. And I want to thank my friend Dr. Spilhouse, who's always excited me. He's got one of the most creative minds that God ever put on two shoulders, I want to tell you, and it's really wonderful to have you here. And General, you've lived in California, and you've lived in many parts of the world. We'd just like to kind of transplant you out there in the upper Midwest. What a great ability of yours to work up there with these fine, productive, creative people. And between the members of Congress that are here and myself, we'll put the arm on all the departments of government in the hopes that they will be generous. I only regret that the Bureau of the Budget, is the Bureau of the Budget here tonight? No, it's not, but I vote myself a proxy for the Bureau of the Budget. We'll do our best. I'm going to run along. Thank you much.
Bye now.
Well, we said we weren't going to have any speeches this evening, and that's a very tough act to follow. But I think tonight, those of us who have been working on this project, and I might say that everyone in this room can feel a share of credit for our being together here tonight. I said that to the Vice President before he left, and he certainly concurs in that. And we're going to come to your proxy later in the evening, Senator. But before that, I would like to ask, if they would, our friends in the executive branch who have been working with us, just to stand so that we all know who they are, and to say a word, if they would. First of all, from Department of Commerce, Director of EDA, Secretary Ross Davis. Mr. Davis.
Continue to be inspired by the vision of the Vice President, vision of Neil Peterson, wherever he's gone, and Senator Mondale, and all you people who are in this orbit of creativity. And as long as I'm inspired by this, I'll be all right.
Thank you very much.
Can we get that sign?
Yeah.
It's on tape. Yeah.
Yeah, we got it on the tape, Senator.
Yeah.
You carry that mic.
From the Department of Housing and Urban Development, we're delighted to have with us tonight Secretary Ralph Taylor. Mr. Taylor.
Trying to follow the Vice President would be to, if I may, try to think in Minnesota terms, be an aging relief pitcher named Worthington. Is that his name?
Worthington.
Tony Oliver.
Alan
Worthington.
Yeah.
But
Satchel Paige.
Seriously, the Vice President covered many aspects of the potential of this project. But there's another aspect that I'd like to dwell on for a moment that I don't think was covered. With the increase in population and the increased urbanization that's taking place, I'm convinced we need to have options for people. Now, we're talking about the way the city can develop. I think that it's important to explore the option as to whether we can create a city, as your proposal contemplates, 100 miles outside of a metropolitan area. Most of your new towns are being built, like Reston or Columbia, within the orbit of a metropolitan area. Or they're developing as maybe one or two out in California are, around the accident of the fact that there was so much land that they could give some land, like the University of California, to set up a new campus at Irvine, to create a new town around that very special economic base. But we don't really know how it is we go about creating a new town out in the country someplace. And yet there's a great increasing desire to have options, to try to see whether we can do this so that we aren't going to have the flood of people from the upper Midwest to Minneapolis and St. Paul and to Chicago and elsewhere. Can we balance our population? And one of the facets, the only facet I can talk about that hasn't already been described far better than I can by the Vice President, is this facet of exploring the problems and the potential of creating a new community. How you go about it, what kind of a base you need to create, what are the possibilities and the problems. And this too is very exciting and of great potential value to the growth of freedom and options within this country of ours. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Some of you may have arrived a little late this evening and missed Secretary Gardner, who came over to spend a few minutes with us because he had a speaking engagement and couldn't be here for dinner. We are delighted to have Secretary Wilbur Cohen with us tonight from Health, Education, and Welfare. Mr. Cohen.
It's been my good fortune to be on quite a number of programs with Senator Humphrey and Vice President Humphrey. And I'm sorry he had to leave because I should have liked to repay him for a little episode that I'm going to tell you about. About 5 years ago, I received a most distinguished award. I was very proud of it, and I wrote a simply brilliant speech. Very persuasive, very erudite. And I was asked to give it in Minneapolis. And I was to be the central speaker in this occasion, getting the award, and it was to be given in the municipal auditorium, the auditorium in Minneapolis. I came to Minneapolis, and I happen to have a lot of relatives in Minneapolis. I spent 11 summers in Minneapolis when I was a young boy. My relatives there, and I loved it there, and I invited all my relatives to see me get the award. I brought my speech, treasured it very carefully, went over it in the hotel room, made last minute changes, and I came to the auditorium. I sat down next to the senator from Minnesota. At the given moment of time, the chairman asked me to step forward to the rostrum to receive the award, and I put my speech down on my chair. And that was my most fatal mistake. As I went up to receive the award, Hubert picked up my speech, flipped it over with the same kind of speed that Jack Kennedy used to use in reading the speech. I received my award in about, I'd say, 2.5 minutes, and I sat down. And then they asked the senator from Minnesota to say a few words. He gave his speech and my speech. And it was then 10 minutes after 10 when he concluded. And for the first and only time in my life, when I was asked to get up to speak, I said, "Ladies and gentlemen, you have already heard my speech. Thank you very much and good night." I've been waiting for a long time to be the speaker after the Vice President. Now he's left, and so I'll have to save that opportunity for another occasion. The vice president's told you about, and the other speakers, about the project relating to the cities. All I want to say that in HEW, we were most entranced and interested in this because in a whole range of areas today, as a result of the very creative and innovative legislation of the last two Congresses, we are proceeding on a whole series of fronts of innovation and experimentation and demonstration in the fields of elementary and secondary education, in the areas of health, and in the areas of medical care that I think are almost, as I said to the Vice President tonight when we were talking together, that I think the American people are really not yet aware of what is going on. And quite frankly, I think the full results of it will not be seen or felt or heard until maybe after 1976. Much of what we are doing today will only begin to be absorbed into the body politic and the community as these types of experiments and innovations become a reality in the community. I think in the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, and in vocational education, I think in the teacher corps, I think in Medicare, I think in our new partnership for health legislation, we're undertaking a whole new set of relationships which will make it possible for communities to be able to deal more effectively with these complex problems of human beings living together. And it's not only a matter, it seems to me, of the experimental city, but it's really the matter of designing new methods of dealing with the delivery of health services to people in these areas, with the training and quality of education, with bringing services like family planning services to people that are living in congregate areas, services to older people who are isolated, eliminating poverty in these areas. And so while we've been very happy to give this grant and to be cooperative with the other two departments and the university and the citizens of Minnesota, I really see it as just one of a whole series of innovative methods and arrangements that are going on now, which will help to do two things as I see it when you take all these programs that we're working on. I think there are two things. One is to have an effect on improving the quality of the American environment and American life, and to give people a greater freedom of choice. I think these two things are really, if you try to take all the things that have been passed by the Education and Labor Committee and the Interstate Commerce Committee and the Ways and Means Committee, and try to wrap up what they try to do, is this idea of the emphasis on quality of the environment in which people live, and to give 200 million American people greater freedom of choice. I think that's a really great challenge. So that when you're working on the experimental city, you're really working on something really vast and really gigantic in making the American society a real vital, interesting place. And while, as the Vice President said, these are very difficult problems in a kind of mixed up world, nevertheless, I think those of us who are working on these problems feel a sense of optimism when there are people like yourselves who are coming together to work together to tackle really the most difficult problems of the decade. And I salute you for having these ideas and working on them. I only wish we had a little bit more money to give you, but we'll keep on trying.
I think you're fully aware of the fact that we're extremely proud of the stature and the capability of our steering committee, men like Buckminster Fuller and Walter Vivrette, who's our project director, Walter Beatty from Syracuse, Max Feldman, Tempo of General Electric. And just to say a word, next to closing tonight, I'd like to call on the man who I regard as a good friend. When I'm asked for a quick identification of him, I usually say he's the man who put up the atlas. Now that's an oversimplification, but it gets across to most people. And we're proud to have him with us and have him here tonight. General Schriever.
thought I'd gotten out of speaking. Everything's been said. I was very happy to hear your comments, Secretary, about the very broad aspects of this whole problem. And the experimental city fits into the total picture as one important element. I think there's a timing for everything. When I got a tap for the missile program back in 1954, we had a tremendous threat to this country, which was just beginning to be recognized because we put a radar up in Turkey and we saw what the Russians were doing in their missile activity at Tur-Yu-Tam. The timing was right to start on the ballistic missile program. The technology was right, the threat was there, and it took a real effort on the part of the government, on the part of science, and here I'm speaking primarily of the academic fraternity, and industry. We now recognize, I think, and have been recognizing to a greater extent the last few years, the urban problems. Really, it's an institutional problem. It's the interaction of our political and social and economic factors as well as what technology can do. But there is always a right time to really try to solve these problems, and the timing is now. I think it will take the same kind of effort, a combination of government, science, and industry to solve the problem. And I regret that we have no more representation of industry here tonight, because we discussed this, Keating. I think that our academic, I might say that the academicians took the lead in getting us started on the ICBM program in the early 50s. And it seems to be true in the urban problem. But if industry doesn't get into it and participate right from the start, the job will not get done. It's going to take a combination of effort. It's going to take proper planning. It's going to take a systems approach to the problem, because I don't know of anything that's more complex than the urban problem that we're faced with. I've looked at it a little bit only from a management standpoint. It's more complex than the missile program ever was. And I hope that I can be of some small assistance to it. I don't know.
Thank you. Before calling on you for the wind-up, I just want to mention two or three other people. I missed, I think they were out of the room, two members of the steering committee, Professor John Hanley and Wayne Thompson, earlier. And the general has already alluded to Steve Keating. Steve is president of Honeywell, which is one of the eight cooperating companies in this initial phase of the research. I think from some of the contacts we've had, we also have Norm Vogel here tonight from IBM. I think I can already assure you, General and gentlemen, that the industrial organizations of America are going to be vitally concerned with this program in the near-term future. I mean, almost anyone that we've talked to and exposed to this idea in any scope at all have stepped right up and said, we want to be a part of this. And I really feel that this is going to come. I'd also like to express great appreciation tonight to Malcolm Moose for being with us. The Ford Foundation, we're so happy, Mac, that you could be with us this evening. Would you say a few words? Say a word or two.
Distinguished guest tonight, Mr. Cullen, in the sense that I was a classmate of the vice president's at the University of Minnesota. We officed together, we taught political science, we had all the wisdom that you ought to have about all these problems. And in 1940, since this is a very unpartisan, bipartisan meeting, we agreed to debate on when will Wilkie or Franklin Roosevelt for a third term. I took Wilkie, Mr. Vice President took Franklin Roosevelt. It was not a nice, tidy debate like the Kennedy-Nixon ones in 1960, where newspaper editors asked him questions, but it was a face-to-face encounter. It was a statewide hookup. All the ground rules were agreed upon, and it was a 30-minute debate. Hubert took the first 27 minutes. I got three. And I stayed out of politics for the next 14 years. But across the aisles, we've been very warm friends. And there's nobody I admire more. And we are, I think, entwined hand to hand for progress here in what are the great problems of American society. And there's no question that the quality of American life is, to me, the problem we face here. So I'm happily joined in this endeavor. I cannot speak for the Ford Foundation, because we've got many witnesses that you can come through. But I do believe there is nothing more important than the nagging urban problems. Water pollution, air pollution, moving people around. We can't put people in concrete storage bins. And I welcome this opportunity to be here tonight to say, let's get this thing airborne. Let's do a test boring in a community that's extremely exciting, because to me it's more indigenous, it's more absolutely exciting and chatting than anything I've seen. And I can't speak for support from my own bailiwick, but I say let's go onward and upwards.
Thanks, man. Forceful and more, giving us more encouragement in this endeavor than Al Cui. And I want my good friend Al to say a word for us.
Thank you, Otto, and friends. As I start out talking, I want to remind you that I'm one of 43 rural congressmen left out of 435. And this is important to us from the rural area as well, because we haven't finished the movement of people from rural America to the cities. And we've seen the horrible things happen when the people from the southeastern part of the country move to the cities. And the people with brains and intelligence, which have been developed by opportunities, have moved out of the cities. Now, this is important to rural Minnesota and rural America as well, what you're doing in this experimental city. Because the farmers and rural America are going to continue to populate the cities. And I think we're in the same position now, as far as urban America is, as we were at the turn of the century, where government policies caused people to spread out across the country to new land, taking 160 acres. And at that time, we had a national commission on country living, trying to understand how man could live in grace with his fellow man out in the rural area. There it was, when people living so far apart from each other. And I think that we've made substantial strides because of those plans. I think we're in that same point now in urban America. And Wilbur Cohn touched on it, and the others did as well. But really, how can man live in grace with his fellow man, concentrated together in a small area in an urban setting? Man needs to be alone and have some privacy, and he needs to develop a sense of community. And we see this happening. People attempting in the city to try and find some privacy, and therefore losing their sense of community, and are not involved. And here's the opportunity that I see in an experimental city, not only to solve the problems of environment, of nature, and the change of the seasons we have in Minnesota. That's important in what would be strictly technological, but man's ability to live with his fellow man in this new city, starting out new, through the whole aspect of what we're trying to do, too much in a compartmentalized basis. And I think you have done the federal government a great service by going to three agencies, because the agencies and the departments of the federal government need to be infected by the innovation and creativity of people outside of the federal government. I think this is what you're going to do. We're going to gain a tremendous amount from this experimental city that wouldn't be possible at all to be done completely by the federal government itself. And so I'm thrilled at the aspect of what we will look back at in the year 2000, what you people started. I think we've got the possibilities here of the most exciting future for people who know that man must live congregated together in small areas in the city in the future. And we must solve these problems if man is going to be able to live in grace with his fellow man.
Thank you. Who has spent endless hours on this project and who has given us his strength and his help and his encouragement, and who helped bring this all together. I'd like to present him tonight as our final speaker, Fritz Mondale. Senator?
Thank you. I think we're getting this audience down now where we can really get down to business. Any of you left who would like to speak, we'd be glad to have you on the program. Seriously, I was glad to be a part with the rest of the congressional delegation and urging the adoption of what is not a Minnesota project, even though the creativity was found in our state, but what is a national project to undertake a scientific effort to explore problems of a city and the cities and create something that makes sense before we begin, in fact, to construct it. I told Secretary Gardner when he left that this was a wonderful thing that the agencies have done, giving us $250,000, and that I'm sure he'd be pleased to know that we're all leaving on a world trip tomorrow morning with those funds to look at cities in Honolulu and elsewhere that would have something to contribute. I think this grant says something that we often forget. I see it on the debate Senate floor. I read about it in the House. I read it in the papers. And that is a failure to understand, as much as we should, the creativity and the vitality of the executive branch. I'm not speaking tonight in political terms. I'm speaking in terms of the extraordinary amount of courage and creativity that we find in our executive branch and we forget that exists there. The easiest thing for Wilbur Cohen and Ross Davis and Tom Francis and Bob Wood and Mr. Daley to have done in this project was clearly to turn it down. You couldn't have hurt yourself a single bit, because when you start talking about $250,000 to put a city under glass, as it was, I think, inadvertently advertised originally, is not the way you win elections. It's the way you get investigated by a congressional committee, as our friends from the executive know painfully well, including General Schriever, who I'm delighted to see a part of this program. But our friends in the executive branch, HEW, Gene Foley, who's not here tonight, and his friends, and Tom Francis and Ross Davis and the rest, and Bob Wood and Secretary Weaver, who spent an evening with us, a memorable evening, and Mr. Daley here, they, instead of approaching it in what's safe, approached it what's good for the country. And because of that, they collectively joined in a very creative and unusual effort in which three agencies cooperated to contribute this seed money toward this, what we hope will be, and I'm sure will be, a pioneering study. And I think that this ought to be remembered and noted in circles beyond this room, that the executive did show this imagination, it did show this courage. And they did it in the light of these fantastic duties that are imposed upon them, and I know something of what you go through. Poor Wilbur's trying to get Medicare started. You know, Paul Douglas said, what's the definition of an expert on Social Security? He's a senator who has Wilbur Cohen's unlisted phone number. And I know what you go through. You know, I called you about the Bagley eggplant and all the rest, and I feel sorry for you. It's your job to turn down the bad ones and accept the good ones. And we'll take the credit when it's good, and we'll call you before us when it's bad. And I think that you've shown great vision in this particular project. We hope from Minnesota that we will justify your confidence. We think we will. But I'd like to speak for everyone here from Minnesota to say that that we come away with renewed confidence and renewed respect for those of you who make up the guts of our American government, and we're truly grateful to you for it. I think basically what we're doing here is something that is long overdue. I introduced a measure a few weeks ago called Council of Social Advisors, because the truth of it is that we guess far more than we should in American public life. We would never permit it in American business. I don't think we permit it in the military. We're not permitting it in the space program. When you talk about people and human programs, we guess all the time. We don't try to quantify, we don't try to plan, we don't try to get ahead of the problem and see, based upon the modern knowledge and social indicators that could be brought to bear, what makes sense before we get into the mess. And surely our cities are classic examples of that. I think in many ways, American society is like the ancient dinosaur, massive in bulk, with a big long neck and little pea brain up front. And the dinosaur disappeared from the world because it was unable to adapt. But I think what we've got to do is to change the bulk and to substitute it for quality, for thinking, for creativity, and for planning. And in this beginning, modest effort, we're trying to change the emphasis in the area where it belongs. Minnesota, we're proud that we have an Athelstan Spillhouse, that we have a great university and a system of public and private colleges, but just as importantly, that we have a private sector. We have leaders in business who would permit a Wayne Thompson to participate as he has. A great corporation would send a Steve Keating down here tonight and all the rest of you to help amass an effort bringing the total community together in this effort to get ahead of the problem and to find new solutions and new ways to create cities that are truly livable. And I'm delighted to come from a state where, on a bipartisan basis, we can work together toward this kind of long overdue objective. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator. I have a benediction for our program this evening. A few of you were here at a dinner on June 28, 1966, when Secretary Weaver was with us. We began the discussion of this program on that occasion. And late in the evening, a little later than this actually, by the clock, the door suddenly burst open and in walked our ambassador to Malta, George Joseph Feldman, Judge Feldman, some of you may know him. The judge sat down at the table in approximately the position that Athel Spillhouse has. And after about 10 minutes of hearing some of the discussion going on at that point, he said, "Mr. Chairman, I'd like to say a few words." And he delivered verbatim the following from A Glance Behind the Curtain by James Russell Lowell. I showed it to the Vice President tonight. He said, "I've got to have a copy of that." So all of you here tonight will get a copy of the following. "New times demand new measures and new men. The world advances and in time outgrows the laws that in our fathers' day were best. And doubtless, after us, some purer scheme will be shaped out by wiser men than we, made wiser by the steady growth of truth. The time is ripe and rotten ripe for change. Then let it come. I have no dread of what is called for by the instinct of mankind, nor think I that God's world will fall apart because we tear a parchment more or less. Truth is eternal, but her effluence with endless change is fitted to the hour. Her mirror is turned forward to reflect the promise of the future, not the past. Fitting words for the experimental city. Gentlemen, we're so glad you could all be with us tonight. I'm sure we shall meet again soon. Thank you.